You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Autism in American children has been steadily touching more lives. According to the CDC, the rates of autism spectrum disorder have been on the rise for more than two decades, impacting one in 44 children. Experts say the rise is largely due to better screening and awareness, but the increase is prompting scientists to find clues about what causes this disorder, which impacts millions of Americans. One of the challenges facing doctors and scientists is diagnosing it in childhood. While autism can be detected in children as young as 18 months, many children don't receive a confirmed diagnosis until they're adolescents or, in some cases, adults. But a researcher at UC Davis is turning a temporary organ during pregnancy, which is often discarded as medical waste in hospitals, the placenta. Dr. Janine LaSalle is a professor of microbiology and immunology at UC Davis Health and is joining us ahead of her talk at the Davis Science Cafe later this evening at G Street Wonder Bar about how the placenta could help us better understand neurodevelopment and causes of autism. And Dr. LaSalle is joined by one of her grad students, Julia Mowat. Welcome to you both.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
So Dr. LaSalle, I want to start with you. You've described the placenta as an often misunderstood and an overlooked organ despite its importance. Why do you believe this?
Yeah, I think placenta is probably the one tissue that comes out of the human body that doesn't get sent to the pathology lab. It's, you know, if anybody's given birth in a hospital, they know it goes in a bucket. It's called the afterbirth. It's an afterthought. But we've decided to look at, we're fortunate to collaborate with folks who were collecting these from a high-risk autism cohort. And I've found that it really is like a time capsule of what the baby was exposed to in utero. And again, it's a combination of both genes and environment. And by looking at the DNA from the placenta, the layers on top of that DNA can give us information about the combination of genes and environment.
Mm. Can you just explain for some of us who, you know, aren't aware of just how vital this temporary organ is, the role, which is critical, in an infant's development in the womb?
Yes. So the placenta is this temporary tissue, but its job is to actually bring in blood, which supplies nutrients and oxygen to the developing baby. And again, the brain is probably the most critical part, especially in primates, and humans are primates, because we have such a large brain. The brain is the biggest energy hog. It's the biggest nutrient hog. So you need all that energy and oxygen getting to the fetal brain. And so the placenta, that's what it does. It reaches out and grabs those blood vessels and brings in oxygen to the baby and all the maternal supply. So if something goes wrong with that process, and there can be very subtle things that go wrong, that really can impact the brain. And it may not be evident by things like ultrasounds and other screens.
Why do you think it's taken this long? I mean, we all relied on a placenta, right? You know, I mean, giving birth and pregnancy and labor and all of that has existed, you know, as long as we've been around. Why do you think it's taken so long to understand this organ?
That's a great question. I potentially the hospital births, and you know, historically obstetricians have been male dominated. So maybe more recently, there's a greater appreciation that it's not actually just a woman's tissue. It actually is derived from the fetus. We can find Y chromosome in for male babies. So I don't know why, but again, it's one of those sort of historical things that could have had to do with maybe the lack of diversity in the obstetric practice.
And you're part of changing that, as well as you, Julia. So you're a graduate student in Dr. LaSalle's lab. What inspired you to pursue a career in this field?
Yeah, it's a great question. I was really interested in women's health and pregnancy, but also in then for the baby, what are the impacts? And I think autism spectrum disorders are a really interesting thing to study because, as you said, it can be diagnosed sometimes quite young, but we know that what happens in the womb really influences whether a child will develop autism spectrum disorder. And so I think studying that really critical time period is important. And it's because the placenta has been so understudied, there's sort of a ton of research that needs to be done. So it's a really exciting field that's sort of breaking out.
Hmm. Well, Dr. LaSalle, what are you learning about what the placenta can provide in terms of better understanding the causes and the risks of autism?
Yeah, we recently published a study where we, again, it was a what I call a lesson in patience, because we had to collect enough these placenta samples. And in this high-risk cohort, it was about 22% of those children had autism. So it's better than the general population, which is about a little under 2% now. But we had to wait until we had enough samples from placentas of babies that went on to develop autism. But from that, we got, you know, a really nice, what we call a hit, a eureka moment on a single chromosome, and found a, discovered a new gene that we're now following up on. We got to name the gene and are now understanding what it does. But it seems to be something that is actually increased with hypoxia, or lack of oxygen, which, again, as I mentioned, the placenta has to bring in the oxygen to the baby. So this is a gene where there's genetic differences in the population, and then we can tell the babies that are higher risk for autism from this locus.
And that research was published in February, correct? Earlier this year?
It was a year ago, yeah.
Oh, a year ago. Julia, how did this help you? You better understand, you know, the scientific potential of what the placenta and other, you know, really vital tissues like the umbilical cord, you know, what it could provide in better understanding neurodevelopmental disorders.
Yeah, I think, as Janine said, it was such a eureka finding. And so I think it is really showing how helpful tissues like placenta can really be. And again, just bringing us back to that, there hasn't been as much research in placenta and those types of tissues, but I think this can really help us. And we're now diving more into this new gene and trying to understand what it can do. And this could just really help diagnose autism earlier in younger kids, which would just be really helpful for the community.
You know, given that if someone is pregnant, they can, you know, get blood work done to see if they are at risk for some disorders. I mean, is that the case for autism as well? Does that currently not exist? And could this research potentially help give people a better understanding or a better idea if they are at a higher risk of having a child that can have autism later?
Yeah, I think right now we're not at the stage where we can diagnose, but if we could even identify the risk, the children at higher risk, I think everyone could benefit from some of the behavioral interventions that they currently do with kids. And again, the earlier you could start, the better. So if we could identify sort of the kids that are at higher risk, particularly if they are sort of younger siblings from families that already have autism, which we know also are already at higher risk, if we can identify those and get them into, you know, some intervention or even just watching. There's a lot of medical issues that come up also in some cases of autism, like gastrointestinal problems, seizures that can come out in later childhood and things like that that could be addressed.
Someone might be listening to this and wondering, is there anything I can do if I become pregnant to help prevent this or to help mitigate these risks? I mean, did you get any answers with that eureka discovery?
Yes, absolutely. And I really would like to say this, because taking prenatal vitamins in the first month of pregnancy, so again, this is a bit challenging because if you're planning a pregnancy, please take prenatal vitamins. They not only prevent neural tube defects, but they also prevent autism. And we saw this in our gene locus because, you know, there, some individuals were at the higher genetic risk, but they didn't have autism, but they were mothers that had taken the prenatal vitamin in the first month of pregnancy. So that's the one preventative thing we know that you can do. Unfortunately, if it's probably too late by the time of the first prenatal visit. It's still good to take it, but the prevention of both neural tube defects and autism is really right in that first month of pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and we've been speaking with Professor Janine LaSalle at UC Davis and UC Davis grad student Julia Mowat about how the placenta could help detect autism and other disorders in infants. So Julia, I mean, it's not just the placenta, right? Are there other samples that are collected at birth that could be useful in autism research?
Yeah, and we are using those tissues. The main one is newborn blood. So in California and some other states, newborns have their heels pricked, and then researchers can get those samples, and then we can do investigations because we're able to get the DNA from those samples. And so in California, those have been collected. It started in the 80s, and so now we're building up quite a large database of those samples that we are able to use in conjunction with placenta. And so that's also sort of a new burgeoning field.
You're also looking into how placental tissues can help us understand how maybe the lives of our parents or our grandparents or previous generations can impact our health, which includes, if neurodevelopment as well.
Yeah, and this is super exciting and something I'm really interested in. So we know that in epidemiological studies, we have seen that certain aspects of our parents or grandparents, including their health or their behavior, can potentially increase risk for autism in the children or grandchildren. But we don't really know why or how that could be working. And so we're starting to be able to use these samples, the placenta and the newborn blood, to be able to understand if across generations, our health and our behavior can influence risk for autism. Things such as cigarette smoking is one thing that we're looking into. And because California started collecting these newborn blood spots back in the 80s, you know, we're starting to get to the point where we can have two, even potentially three generations of those blood spots and be able to look multiple generations what is going on in the DNA.
Yeah, you're talking about, you know, something that is genetic, but there's also environmental factors, right, Dr. LaSalle, that can contribute to an increased risk for autism.
Yes, and that's actually why we focus on the placenta, too, is because all of these environmental factors really focus around in utero exposures. And there are the ones that are common in the population where they can do really big numbers in epidemiology, and that would be like air pollution and pesticides. So those are ones where there have been, you know, mixed studies, but definitely I think air pollution is probably one of the stronger ones. But then there are some of the, you know, more rare exposures, actually rubella infection during pregnancy. You know, is rare in the population, but my concern is actually with some of the next generation who, maybe whose parents were trying to prevent autism in the child by not getting their vaccinations. With those, you know, women grow up and have children of their own. If they get rubella during pregnancy, that could be really, it's like a 50-fold increased risk for autism in the child.
You know, given that we're not at a point yet of diagnosing autism in utero, you know, we're still learning a lot about autism. Someone may think, okay, well, if it can't be reversed in someone, if they have autism, they're going to have autism. What are the benefits to getting ahead of it and learning of this diagnosis at 18 months versus when they're adolescents or even in some cases an adult?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're definitely not trying to prevent, you know, autism. It's something you're born with. It's you know, there's a large part that's genetic. But what you can do is with early interventions is just understand. Yeah, again, the behavioral interventions can often help kids become high functioning. They're not really changing the personality. It's improving their ability to adapt. But also the medical issues that can arise because there are issues with sleep. Again, with GI, constipation, diarrhea, and things like that, that actually can almost, if those aren't addressed, that it can make things much worse. Because again, the brain is dependent on everything else in our body, and getting the children getting enough sleep and addressing GI issues before they become a problem is really important.
And autism was first like officially kind of discovered or diagnosed in like 1980. Correct. So it's been a few, over 40 years, you know, of work and research and awareness. And now, I mean, the CDC recently, I believe back in this last spring in March, they released a report stating that they found autism rates have increased in the U.S., but that's also largely due to that awareness, right? And that screening and that testing. Does that just increase your sense of urgency to better understand the root causes and risks?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I've been working in this area for over 20 years now, and I think about the time that the Mind Institute started at UC Davis, I got interested in these sort of unknown forms of autism. And yes, the challenge for the field is that over that time, the diagnosis has changed. Every time they come out with a new DSM, it changes. So it is a challenge for the field because the diagnosis of autism is changing. But I think it's more motivation to come up with molecular tests, and that's what we're doing, is if you could have a laboratory test, not a behavioral diagnosis, that would make it easier to, again, identify kids at risk for developing those behaviors later on.
Well, remind us what the Mind Institute is.
Yeah, the Mind Institute is a center at UC Davis that really focuses on neurodevelopmental disorders, particularly autism. And it was started by a push from parents of kids with autism back in the 90s, who really said they wanted to have a research center to focus on this area, and they wanted it in Sacramento, being close to the policymakers in Sacramento.
And Julia, I mean, you're part of the next generation of scientists in this field. It must be an exciting time for you as well.
Yeah, it is really exciting. And I think that connection with the MIND Institute, being in Sacramento near policymakers, I'm really interested in science policy and science communication. And so I think this is a really exciting field to be in. Mm.
And Dr. LaSalle, this is kind of like a preview conversation because you're going to be talking tonight at the Davis Science Cafe. And it's titled The Womb's Wisdom, Predictive Insights from the Delivery Room Trash Bin. And the event is at 5:30 p.m. at G Street Wonder Bar in downtown Davis. If people are going to be attending this evening, what can they expect from tonight's discussion?
A lot of audience participation about their feelings about this field, and I will be talking about autism, but I wanted to just kind of start with the womb because I think the womb has a nice connotation to
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah. And it touches a lot of people's lives. I think in a venue like the Davis Science Cafe, you know, at a bar in downtown Davis, it must be nice to change the environment from an academia setting to just the general public and people who are just interested in learning more.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited about this. It's a different thing for me. It's, you know, but I really do like, and I think like students have almost pushed me more into the science communication, and I've been working on that as well, because I think it's important, you know, that we do step away from our own little bubble sometimes and explain to people why we're doing what we do.
Julia, what do you hope people take away from the conversation if they attend tonight?
I think just to think more about the placenta. I think we don't spend a lot of time thinking about it. I surely never did before joining Janine's lab, but I think it's a great organ, and I think we should all not be scared to talk more about the placenta.
Yep, and the womb's wisdom.
Exactly.
Well, Dr. LaSalle and Julia, thank you for the conversation.
Thank you.
And all the research. Dr. Janine LaSalle is a professor of microbiology and immunology at UC Davis Health, along with graduate student Julia Mowat, sharing their research into the placenta and its potential to help us better understand the causes of autism. Dr. LaSalle will be hosting a conversation on this topic this evening at the Davis Science Cafe. That is at the G Street Wonder Bar in Davis, and it starts at 5:30 p.m. Still ahead, a comic herstorian, H-E-R, is coming to Sacramento. Trina Robbins is the first female to draw Wonder Woman for DC Comics and joins us ahead of her Sacramento visit to talk about her pioneering career. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.